Chapter 31. The Woman of Tanchico. The common room of the inn was brightly lit, the tables not near a quarter full so late. A few white-aproned serving women with mugs of ale or wine passed among the men, and a low murmur of talk ran under the sound of a harp being strummed and plucked. The patrons, some with pipes clenched in their teeth and one pair hunched over a stones board, had the look of ship's officers and minor merchants from the smaller houses, their coats well cut and of fine wool, but with none of the gold or silver or embroidery that richer men might have had. And for once there was no clack and rattle of dice to be heard. Fires blazed on the long hearths at the ends of the room, but even without those there would have been a warm feeling about the place. The harper stood on a tabletop, reciting Mara and the Three Foolish Kings to the music of his harp. His instrument, all worked in gold and silver, was fit for a palace. Matt knew him. He had saved Matt's life once. The harper was a lean man, would have been tall except for a stoop, and he moved with a limp when he shifted his footing on the tabletop. Even here inside he wore his cloak, all covered with fluttering patches in 100 colors. He always wanted everyone to know he was a gleeman. His long mustaches and bushy eyebrows were as snow-white as the thick hair on his head, and his blue eyes held a look of sorrow as he recited. The look was as unexpected as the man. Matt had never known Tom Maryland to be a sorrowful man. He took a table, setting his things on the floor by his stool, and ordered two mugs. The pretty young serving girl's big brown eyes twinkled at him. "Two, young master? You do not look such a hard-drinking man as that." Her voice held a mischievous edge of laughter. After rummaging a bit, he brought out two silver pennies from his pocket. One more than paid for the wine, but he slipped her another for her eyes. "My friend will be joining me." He knew Tom had seen him. The old gleeman had nearly stopped the story dead when Matt came in. That was new, too. Few things startled Tom enough for him to let it show, and nothing short of trollocs had ever made him stop a story in the middle that Matt knew. When the girl brought the wine and his coppers in change, he let the pewter mugs sit and listen to the end of the story.
"It was as we have said it should be," said King Madel, trying to untangle a fish from his long beard.
Tom's voice seemed to almost echo inside a great hall, not an ordinary common room. His plucked harp sounded the Three Kings' final foolishness.
"It was as we said it would be," announced Orander. And feet slipping in the mud, he sat down with a great splash. "It was as we said it must be," proclaimed Kadar, as he searched up to his elbows in the river for his crown. "The woman knows not whereof she speaks. She is the fool." Madel and Orander agreed with him loudly, and with that, Mara had had enough. "I've given them all the chances they deserve, and more," she murmured to herself. Slipping Kadar's crown into her bag with the first two, she climbed back onto her cart, clucked to her mare, and drove straight back to her village. And when Mara had told them all that happened, the people of Heap would have no king at all.
He strummed the major theme of the king's foolishness once more, this time sliding to a crescendo that sounded even more like laughter, made a sweeping bow, and nearly fell off the table. Men laughed and stamped their feet, though likely every one of them had heard the story many times before, and called for more. The story of Mara was always well received, except perhaps by kings. Tom nearly fell again climbing down from the table, and he was more unsteady in his walk than a somewhat stiff leg could account for as he came to where Matt was sitting. Casually putting his harp on the table, he dropped onto a stool in front of the second mug and gave Matt a flat stare. His eyes had always been sharp as awls, but they seemed to be having trouble focusing.
"Common," he muttered.
His voice was still deep, but it no longer seemed to reverberate.
"The tale is 100 times better in plain chant and 1,000 in high, but they want common."
Without another word, he buried his face in his wine. Matt could not recall ever seeing Tom finish playing that harp without immediately putting it away in its hard leather case. He had never seen him the worse for drink. It was a relief to hear the gleeman complaining about his listeners. Tom never thought their standards were as high as his. At least something of him had not changed. The serving girl was back, with no twinkle in her eyes. "Oh, Tom," she said softly, then rounded on Matt. "If I'd known he was the friend you awaited, I'd not have brought you wine for him if you give me 100 silver pence." "I did not know he was drunk," Matt protested. But her attention was back on Tom, her voice gentle again. "Tom, you need some rest. They'll keep you telling stories all night and all day if you let them." Another woman appeared on Tom's other side, lifting her apron off over her head. She was older than the first, but no less pretty. The two might have been sisters. "A beautiful story, I've always thought, Tom, and you tell it beautifully. Come, I've slipped a warming pan into your bed, and you can tell me all about the court in Camelin." Tom peered into the mug as if surprised to find it empty, then blew out his long mustaches and looked from one woman to the other.
"Pretty maid, pretty Sal. Did I ever tell you that two pretty women have loved me in my life? That is more than most men can claim."
"You've told us all about it, Tom," the older woman said sadly. The younger glared at Matt as if this were all his fault.
"Two," Tom murmured. "Morgaze had a temper, but I thought I could ignore that. So it ended with her wanting to kill me. Dina, I killed, as good as. Not much difference. Two chances I've had, more than most, and I threw them both away."
"I will take care of him," Matt said. Maida and Sal were both glaring at him now. He gave them his best smile, but it did not work. His stomach muttered loudly. "Don't I smell chicken roasting? Bring me 3 or 4. The two women blinked and exchanged startled looks when he added, "Do you want something to eat too, Tom?"
"I could do with more of this fine Andorran wine." The gleeman raised his cup hopefully.
"No more wine for you tonight, Tom." The older woman would have taken his cup if he had let her. Almost on top of the first woman, the younger said, in a mixture of firmness and pleading, "You'll have some chicken, Tom. It is very good."
Neither would leave until the gleeman agreed to eat something, and when they did go, they gave Matt such a combination of stares and sniffs that he could only shake his head.
"Burn me. You would think I was encouraging him to drink more. Women."
But pretty eyes on the pair of them.
"Rand said you were alive," he told Tom when Maida and Sal were out of hearing. "Moraine always said she thought you were. But I heard you were in Kyrian, and meaning to go on to Tyr."
"Rand is still well, then."
Tom's eyes sharpened to almost the keenness Matt remembered.
"I am not sure I expected that. Moraine is still with him, is she? A fine-looking woman. A fine woman, if she were not Aes Sedai. Meddle with that sort and you get more than your fingers burned."
"Why wouldn't you expect Rand to be all right?" Matt asked carefully. "Do you know of something that could harm him?"
"No. I don't know anything, boy. I suspect more than is healthy for me, but I know nothing."
Matt abandoned that line of talk. No use firming his suspicions. No use letting him know I know more than's healthy myself. The older woman, Tom called her Maida, came back with 3 chickens with crisp brown skins, giving the white-haired man a worried look and Matt a warning one before she left. Matt ripped off a leg and set to as he talked. Tom frowned into his cup and never looked at the birds.
"Why are you here in Tarvalin, Tom? It's the last place I'd have expected to see you, the way you feel about Aes Sedai. I heard you were coining money in Kyrian."
"Kyrian,"
the old gleeman muttered, the sharpness fading from his eyes again.
"Such trouble it causes killing a man, even when he deserves killing."
He made a flourish with one hand and was holding a knife. Tom always had knives secreted about him. Drunk he might have been, but he held the blade steady enough.
"Kill a man who needs killing, and sometimes others pay for it. The question is, was it worth doing anyway? There's always a balance, you know. Good and evil, light and shadow. We would not be human if there wasn't a balance."
"Put that away,"
Matt growled around a mouthful. I don't want to talk about killing. Light, that fellow is still lying right out there in the street. Burn me, I ought to be on a ship by now. I just asked why you're in Tarvalin. If you had to leave Kyrian because you killed someone, I do not want to know about it. Blood and ashes, if you can't pull your wits out of the wine enough to talk straight, I'll leave now. With a sour look, Tom made the knife disappear.
Why am I in Tarvalin? I'm here because it is the worst place I could be, except maybe Camelin. It's what I deserve, boy. Some of the Red Adja still remember me. I saw a lighter in the street the other day. If she knew I was here, she would peel my hide off in strips, and then she would stop being pleasant.
I never knew you to feel sorry for yourself, Matt said disgustedly. Do you mean to drown yourself in wine?
What do you know of it, boy? Tom snarled. Put a few years on you, see something of life, maybe love a woman or two, and then you'll know. Perhaps you will if you have the brains to learn. Ah! You want to know why I'm in Tarvalin? Why are you in Tarvalin? I remember you shivering when you found out Moraine was Aes Sedai. You nearly soiled yourself every time anybody even mentioned the power. What are you doing in Tarvalin, with Aes Sedai on every side?
I am leaving Tarvalin. That's what I am doing here. Leaving. Matt grimaced. The Gleeman had saved his life, and maybe more. A fate had been involved. That was why Tom's right leg did not work as well as it should. There could not be enough wine on a ship to keep him this drunk. I'm going to Camelin, Tom. If you need to risk your fool life for some reason, why not come with me?
Camelin, Tom said musingly.
Camelin, Tom. Elida will be likely going back there sooner or later, so you'd have her to worry about. And from what I remember, if Morgaze puts her hands on you, you'll wish Elida had you.
Camelin. Yes. Camelin would fit my mood like a glove.
The Gleeman glanced at the chicken platter and gave a start.
What did you do, boy? Stuff them up your sleeve?
There was nothing left of the three birds but bones and carcasses with only a few strips of flesh remaining. Sometimes I get hungry, Matt muttered. It was an effort not to lick his fingers. Are you coming with me or not?
Oh, I will come, boy.
As Tom pushed himself to his feet, he did not seem as unsteady as he had been.
You wait here, and try not to eat the table, while I get my things and say some goodbyes.
He limped away, not staggering once. Matt drank a little of his wine and stripped off a few shreds that were left on the chicken carcasses, wondering if he had time to order another, but Tom was back quickly. His harp and flute in their dark leather cases hung on his back with a tied blanket roll. He carried a plain walking staff as tall as he was. The two serving women followed on either side. Matt decided they were sisters. Identical big brown eyes looked up at the Gleeman with identical expressions. Tom was kissing first Saul, then Maida, and patting cheeks as he headed for the door, jerking his head for Matt to follow. He was outside before Matt could finish collecting his own belongings and pick up his quarterstaff. The younger of the two women, Saul, stopped Matt as he reached the door. Whatever you said to him, I forgive you for the wine, even if it is taking him away. I've not seen him this alive in weeks. She pressed something into his hand, and when he glanced at it, his eyes widened in confusion. She had given him a silver Tarvalin mark. For whatever it was you said. Besides, whoever is feeding you is not doing a good job of it. But you still have pretty eyes. She laughed at the expression on his face. Matt was laughing too, in spite of himself, as he went out into the street, rolling the silver coin across the backs of his fingers. So I have pretty eyes, do I? His laughter shut off like the last drip from a wine barrel. Tom was there, but not the corpse. The windows of the taverns down the street put enough light across the cobblestones for him to be sure of it. The city guard would not have carried a dead man away without asking questions at those taverns and at the woman of Tanchico, too.
What are you staring at, boy? Tom asked. No Trollocs in those shadows.
Footpads, Matt muttered. I was thinking about footpads.
No street thieves or strong arms in Tarvalin either, boy.
When the guards take a footpad, not that many try that game here, the word spreads. But when they do, they haul him to the tower. And whatever it is the Aes Sedai do to him, the fellow leaves Tarvalen the next day as wide-eyed as a goosed girl. I understand they're even harder on women caught thieving. No, the only way you'll have your money stolen here is somebody selling you polished brass for gold or using shaved dice. There are no footpads.
Matt turned on his heel and strode past Tom, heading toward the docks, quarterstaff thumping off the cobblestones, as if he could push himself ahead faster.
We're going to be on the first ship sailing, whatever it is. The first, Tom.
Tom's stick clicked hurriedly after him.
Slow down, boy. What's your hurry? There are plenty of ships sailing day and night. Slow down. There aren't any footpads.
The first bloody ship, Tom. If it's sinking, we'll be on it.
If they weren't footpads, what were they? They had to be thieves. What else could they be?